The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.
According to the latest data from the Banking and Payments Federation Ireland, borrowers from Dublin accounted for more than 40% of first-time buyer mortgages drawn down to buy properties in Kildare, in Wicklow and in Meath last year. So what impact will that have on the capital itself and on the surrounding commuter counties? I'm joined by Carl Dieter, who's compliance manager with Irish Mortgage Brokers. Carl, good morning.
Hey, good morning, Pat.
It's no surprise. We all know people who've had to move out of town, even though they'd love to have stayed close to the mammy and daddy, but cannot afford to so do.
Yeah, it's basically a story of price pressure and what you'd kind of describe as an expanding bullseye. So people might say that they want to live in one specific place, but as price pressures rise, they end up being pushed out to less expensive areas, and they basically trade off their ideal location for what they can afford that's as close as possible to their ideal location, and they make up for the price that they can't afford with things like increased commute times, you know, and a host of other things. Now, some of this is also being driven by... Sorry, go on.
Carry on. Some of it has also been driven by what?
Oh, by the fact that people can work from home, so they're not as regionally bound to places. And if you can work from anywhere, you know, you don't have to necessarily go for the highest price house. You could go into a different location. And the supply is actually also better in the places that they're moving towards as well, which also helps.
So the idea being that if you've got a certain amount of money, you can buy maybe a hovel in Dublin's inner city or perhaps a three-bedroom home in a commuter county.
Yeah, and like I said, the supply matters as well. I mean, if you look at, say, Help to Buy claims last year, Kildare, Meath, Laois and Wicklow accounted for about 35% of them nationally. And, you know, this is actually, you know, a third of all new house completions last year was in the same four counties. So you've got the supply there, you've got affordability there, you've got schemes that the government run to help people have the money to buy a house. And those things all add up. And it means that people are making choices to live elsewhere.
Now, the great thing, I suppose, about some of the commuter towns, if you think of Naas, it used to be on the main road to everywhere and all the traffic had to go through Naas. The same with Newbridge. Those days are gone and these towns have begun to thrive because they can have a town centre that is user-friendly and so on. But there's no doubt that getting to them is still a real pain. And when I'm coming back from an outside broadcast on a Friday afternoon, and I'm looking at people leaving the capital in many kilometre-long queues, I just wonder, this is not just happening on a Friday, it's happening every day. How do they put up with it?
Well, like I said, it's a trade-off. And they either, over time, end up moving to the area that they really want to desire, or they find new lives that are more appropriate to where they move to. But, like Pat, like Naas is, like it's a big bustling place now. You know, Kerry Foods, one of Ireland's most successful companies, has a huge headquarters out there. Like there's a lot of reasons why you might move down to Naas initially, get sick of the commute and find some local job that is actually your dream job, ideal. You know, they've got good schools, good infrastructure, people are nice. Like it's not a case that you have to live in Dublin. So, I mean, that's something people come to that same conclusion all the time. But the inter-county movement, by the way, it's super common. I mean, it happens, you know, in County Clare, borrowers from Limerick, first-time buyers anyway, were almost 15% of the buyers in County Clare. So, like, that push-pull factor between places, it's super common. I mean, you could look at it as being like, oh, it's tragic, you've got longer commutes. You could look at it as being super positive. You could say, wow, this is great. People are able to afford homes. They're buying homes. They're living their lives. You could put a negative slant on it and say, oh, but they're using Help to Buy and that pushes up prices. Or you could put a positive slant on it and say, look, that's helping people get the homes that they otherwise wouldn't afford. Ideally, we'd have a lot more homes, a lot more affordability, and then people could make all sorts of different choices. Yeah. But in the fact that we don't, you kind of have to live with whatever you've got at the time.
Okay, and but that's... Carl, one of the dismaying factors is in the capital, it would appear, certainly in my area and in other places we've looked at, there are no apartments for sale anymore. They're all to rent. And the developers of these apartments say, we can't afford to build them for sale. We have to build them for rent because we'll have a guaranteed income stream. The banks will give us the money. Do you actually believe that? That we are utterly dysfunctional compared to other cities in Europe?
Well, there's a few things that feed into that. One is that the thing that worked best for us to build apartments in the past was a type of tax relief called Section 23. And that Section 23 actually was part of the thing that helped to kind of blow up our property investment because people went hyper after it. Just so that people understand, it basically meant you could rent a house out and not pay tax on the rent, was the short, easy to explain version of it. It was incredibly effective, took loads of areas that were tenements, turned them into apartments. Now, people say those apartments are no good, et cetera. Put all that aside, it worked. At the moment, you don't really have incentives like that to encourage localized investment. And so the people who can take on these huge and expensive projects are normally doing them with a type of funding where matching the type of payments that they have to make might, it fits well with rents. So like it might be backed by a pension fund, it might be backed by a real estate investment trust. And the fact that it's happening, like there's no secret cabal of people who sit around not building properties. Like that's mythological thinking. It's something that's kind of put out there as if it's like, oh, this is by intent. It's not. The people who can build them do build them. But like if it's not something that you can afford to do as a builder and justify the price that comes out the other end, like I'll put it this way. Say if someone did build 100 apartments and said, yeah, each of these are a million, you'd have people jumping up and down saying, no, this is disgraceful. But if they can build those apartments and rent them out, because they won't sell for a million and that makes sense for them, well, then that's what's going to happen. So this stuff, it happens for a reason. And the reasons are that there's various elements of dysfunction. There's various elements of the building code, of the planning system, of the time it takes, of the cost of materials, of labor availability, and it all feeds into this. So, you know, it's just, you're not going to be buying apartments in Dublin anytime soon unless you buy a secondhand one.
Some of the comments coming in, young people buying outside Dublin have no choice because Dublin is just too expensive. The grants are not applicable for new houses in Dublin as the houses are too expensive to qualify for the grants. Another one, commuter towns are bad for the environment. Hypocrisy on the government's part to allow this to happen and then lecture us and tax us on travel. That's from Tommy. It's amazing how people on social welfare can now choose to stay to be near their family. They cite the need for support in refusing a house outside the city, but people who cannot be on the social welfare programs have to travel and most likely make their lives a misery. And that is something that you often get with local authorities, Carl, where people say, I need to be near the mammy or I won't move to another local authority because. But sure, every child in the country would prefer to maybe live close to the area where they grew up.
Yeah, it's kind of confounding that when it comes to housing provided by the state, that there's this separate set of kind of entitlement thinking that happens. I mean, like I work on Pierce Street and I've got, you know, Pierce House, the Leo Fitzgeralds, lots of different, say, you know, blocks of flats around. And people living there enjoy some of the best amenities, best locations, and like rents that are kind of 50, 60 euro a week. It's actually an amazing thing. I mean, everybody would obviously want that. But it's weird because like if you don't have funds, you can get a house like that. But if you're working your arse off and, you know, you and a partner say, like, you might end up having to move 2 hours away, even though, like, you're the one who's kind of doing everything right and there's people living there who might, you know, like, never work a day in their life kind of thing. And I'm not saying that they all don't work. That's a trope. I'm not getting into that. But there are obviously people who really never contribute. So I think there's something in that we have to find a better way to do it, to either have more housing for people trying to come up the, you know, through the ranks where they can get, you know, affordable rent, or also ensure that people who have housing, if it's not needed for them anymore, if they're no longer like, you know, an obvious social support candidate, why do we keep on supporting them? Same way you don't keep people in hospital after they get healthy again. There's a lot of complexity around that. And it usually, by the way, your text machine is about to blow up because when you talk about this stuff, everyone gets crazy about it and hostile. I'm just making the point that there has got to be a better way to manage that. And, you know, a lot of the state-owned housing, it's in excellent areas. Maybe they should knock some of it down and rebuild it fresh, but make it 20 stories instead of four. And then everyone can stay in the same area and you'd have like 16 floors of, you know, state rental property in a great place. Like, there's other ways of thinking about it.
Rents could be income related so that the brain surgeon plays one rent for a 1,400 square foot apartment, a family apartment, and someone else pays a lot less because their income is commensurately small.
That's actually a fascinating thing when you talk about that, actually, Pat. And I'll tell you why. Because council rents, the way that they're actually designed, when you say a brain surgeon would pay a separate rent, here's an example. I mean, if you take a brain surgeon who, I don't actually know how much a brain surgeon makes. We say 200,000 or something like that.
Yeah.
So if a brain surgeon makes 200,000, their rent in a Dublin City Council owned property would be, say, in South Dublin Council, 1,400 a month-ish. It taps out at the maximum amount being 327 a week, because the rents are kept artificially low. And that's why our social housing never works, because it's designed to not pay for itself. And actually, when you get into those calculations between Dublin City Council, Dunleary, Rathdown, South Dublin Council, Fingal, it's all completely bonkers. And it's by design, it's never going to work. But no one ever talks about that, because rental calculators is a way to send everyone to sleep. But that's a fact, you know. It's a really weird thing.
Carl, thank you very much for joining us. Carl Dieter, Compliance Manager with Irish Mortgage Brokers.
The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance.
Weekdays at 9 a.m. on News Talk.